Everybody turn in their paper. Let's see. I've got papers up here for you to pick up if you haven't. Any questions about anything from last time? Recap what I was doing. I was trying to solve the steady state heat problem on a disk, and so that's the heat. That's the heat equation, but at steady state, so we're holding the outside at a fixed temperature, and letting time go to infinity, which means it achieves steady state. So that heat equation is Laplacian U equals zero in the steady state case. And so we're looking for a bit, that means the function's harmonic. And so the Dirichlet problem on a disk is we're looking for a harmonic function on the unit disk with a given boundary values. That's the temperature we're holding it on the boundary and letting time go on until it achieves steady state and things stop changing. That's a pretty famous problem. And it's funny how it comes up in lots of areas, not just in heat, but in electrostatics and all kinds of scientific places. It also is very important from a theoretical point of view. And so since we're in polar coordinates, it makes sense to look for solutions that are the form r of r times theta of theta. And when you write out the Laplace equation in polar coordinates, that's what you get. And so I cranked out, I plugged those, took those derivatives and plugged it in the heat equation. And then I was able to pull apart, and get all the functions of r on one side and all the functions of theta on the other. That's called the method of separation of variables. And when I did that, I got two differential equations. So this function of r all by itself has to be equal to a function of theta all by itself. Those both have to be a constant, lambda. And so that led me to two ordinary differential equations. there were some kind of hidden boundary conditions in this problem. Theta of theta, when I go around 2 pi and come back, it's got to hook up with itself. So that's called a periodic boundary condition. And I took my, rather than going from 0 to 2 pi, I went from minus pi to pi like we do in Fourier series. So it's got to hook up. And then so the solution wouldn't have any kinks, the derivative would have to hook up too. And that gives you a new kind of Sturm-Liouville problem. The Sturm-Liouville problem we get is the usual one. Theta looks like it's going to be harmonic motion or something like that, with theta periodic. It's called periodic boundary conditions. When theta is less, when lambda is less than zero, that constant, well, the hyperbolic functions, hyperbolic sine and hyperbolic cosine, are certainly not periodic. You can't make them, in fact, if you tried to say, oh, maybe I can make them come back and hook up, you'd fail. They just don't work. It's a fun thing to play around with. And let's see, the lambda equals zero case, if lambda is zero, you get theta double prime equals zero. And those are just linear functions that solve that, a theta plus b. And you can make them periodic. The a would have to be zero, but if it has slope zero, then the thing is just a constant hooks up with itself just perfect. So we get a constant solution for lambda equals zero. And then in the lambda bigger than zero case, that's when you get lots of periodic solutions, but the period has to be right. The period has to be 2 pi. And you can play around and see that you get exactly the right periodic solutions for lambda equal to n squared, so that the cosine n theta and sine n theta, they come around and hook up with themselves. Any other frequency, they wouldn't hook up with themselves and you wouldn't be able to make it periodic. There's a little bit of work involved in that, I'm kind of skipping that. It's a fun thing to sit around and play around with. And for those, I get the standard constant cosine n theta plus constant sine n theta. And what I started at the end of last hour was finding the corresponding r function. In the case r equals 0, n equals 0, remember my theta function was a constant, and I was able to solve that differential equation directly. Let's see, if in the n equals 0 case, I cancel out the r in the denominator, and I'm left with, it's a reducible differential equation. I can reduce it to a first order. R squared r double prime plus r prime can be pretty easily reduced to a first order equation. And I played that game and found the integrating factor. And my general solution in that case was a constant times natural log of r plus another constant. But this is supposed to be a physical problem involving heat. If there's a log r term, that would make this thing get either infinite. If C1 is positive, this would be infinitely cold at the origin. If C1 was negative, this would be infinitely hot at the origin. And we that's physically unbelievable. And so for this to make physical sense and for our solutions to not have a hairy singularity at the origin, we need to rule out that case. So we need C1 to be zero, which means we get the constant solution again. So my first solution I found so far, the only one, is theta and r being constant functions. So my zeroth order solution would be constant times constant. And there's no point in calling both constants. I'll call one of them 1, and I'll make the other one be an a naught. That's going to be the a naught term in a Fourier series. Okay. And now I'm going to switch over and continue the next part. So let's see. I have my un of r and theta. It's going to be an rn of r times a theta n of theta, capital theta, n of theta. And I found this capital N of theta is an cosine n theta plus Bn sine n theta. And this one solves a differential equation. R squared r double prime plus r prime over r equals lambda. And we found that the lambda has to be an n squared. We only get meaningful periodic theta if that lambda is equal to n squared. So that's where the boundary conditions came in, to pin down the lambdas. And this kind of differential equation is a famous kind. Let's see, be r squared r double prime plus r prime minus n squared r, n squared is a constant, equals zero. In the last homework assignment, you messed around with that, and Stein showed you a change of variables that that reduced it to some equation you could know how to do. Another way I wanted to show you today, let's see, so this is, we're going to take a side track here and talk about ODEs. You know, if you have A y double prime plus B y prime plus C y equals zero, that's constant coefficient linear second order ODE. So that's called constant coefficient linear homogeneous, because of the zero on the right hand side. ODE, second order ODE. And I reviewed this earlier in the term. Remember, the trick was to try y equals e to the something x. I called it r, unfortunately. How about mu? And you get a characteristic polynomial, and it tells you what mu's work, and there were cases to consider. Okay, so that's the something we did. Today, I'm going to change my r's to x's just to, let's say we have alpha x squared y double prime plus beta x y primes. So my r equation is r squared r double prime. I'm changing it to an x squared y double prime plus r prime, so beta x y prime. And then we got another constant, alpha, beta, darn, I don't have a C, so I'll call it CY. Constants, ABC. That's called an Euler equation. It's funny how many things are called Euler. Euler's method, Euler's equation. One of my favorite math jokes is, there's the Euler method for solving ODEs, and then there's the improved Euler method. One of my favorite jokes, math jokes, is that if mathematicians had to name all the animals in the world, there'd be a cat. There'd be a cat with no legs, that would be a snake. There'd be a cat with a long neck, that would be a giraffe. Yeah, mathematicians don't get very creative when they make up names. Anyway, that's an Euler equation. And like the constant coefficient linear one up there, you can kind of guess e to the rx, because when you differentiate it, the mu's come out, constants come out. And so you think, oh, maybe I can choose the right constant so I can make them add up to zero. Well, when you look at this one, you think, aha, when I differentiate x to a power, differentiating it would make the derivative, the order, go down one. And so this x would bring it back up. Differentiating it again would make the order go down two. And multiplying by x squared would bring it back up. So Euler, being the brilliant, thought he would try y equal x to a power. Then when you plug it in, you get y prime, let's see, that would be p times x to the p minus 1. Y double prime would be p times p minus 1, x to the p minus 2. And you plug that into the ODE and try to make it work. So plug in. So this is a standard kind of thing to do and force it to work. Okay, so let's see, when I plug it in, I would get alpha x squared, and then I'd get p times p minus 1, x to the p minus 2, and the next one would be beta x, first derivative is p times x to the p minus 1, and then c times the y function is just cx to the p. And I want to cook things up so this adds up to 0. And now you'd think, you look at it and say, aha, there's going to be a characteristic polynomial here. This x squared is going to bring that power back up to x to the p. This x is going to bring that one up to x to the p. And I got an x to the p there. So when I factor out the x to the p, what's left is alpha p times p minus 1 plus beta p plus c times x to the p equals 0. This is called the characteristic polynomial. It's a quadratic thing. I'm going to get two p's that work, if I'm lucky. This is called the characteristic polynomial. And I need it equal to 0. And so that's going to give me two p's. And maybe I'll tell you the cases. They're kind of fun to go through. The good case, case one, it's a quadratic thing, so you get two real p that are unequal. So you get p1 and p2 real and unequal. Then you get a general solution to that equation. You can show that the Wronskian is non-zero, so you can satisfy any and all initial conditions with these two, or whatever kind of initial condition is kind of tricky, because x equals 0 is a bad spot for this equation. You'll notice that it's possible for solutions to be singular, like x to the minus power. So if I was, I'd have initial conditions maybe, but not at x equals 0. Anyway, the general solution is c1x to the p1 plus c2x to the p2. These two things are linearly independent, and therefore this would form the general solution from your ODE days. Case two, so that would be a discriminant that's positive. If the discriminant was zero, then you get two that are equal. So only one real root, repeated one real root. Repeated only one real root. Then you'd have to play around. You'd get x to the p1. So you get one real root, p. Then it turns out that you get y1 is x to the p. And then you can play reduction of order, it's called. So it's a method. When you have one solution to a second order ODE, you would try reduction of order. You try a second solution of the form u times x to the p, your first solution. You plug it into the ODE, and then you get a simpler differential equation for u, which you can solve. And you'll find that plug it in and force it, you see that you need u is equal to the log of x. Luckily, that's not going to happen to us today. So you get the general solution, y is c1 times your first solution, and then c2 times your second solution, x to the p times log of x. So let's see, that's the good case, this is the next case. And then since I'm doing all the cases, I might as well do the last one, which is what happens if you get complex roots. So then you would get p equals, so how about a plus or minus bi. That corresponds to a negative discriminant in the quadratic formula. But then I get a complex solution.
x, let's get, I'm only going to need one of them.
I'm going to turn out I don't care about the other one. I get a complex solution, and what does that stand for? That would be x to the a times x to the bi. And x to the bi is e to the bi log x. Let's see. And so that's x to the a times cosine b log x plus I sine b log x. And it turns out when you have one complex solution, you automatically get two real solutions, namely the real and the imaginary parts. So there's one real solution, and here's the other one, x to the a sine b log x. And so from one complex solution, you get two real solutions. This is a real solution without the I. And sure enough, you can plug them back in and see that those are two linearly independent real solutions. And so now that you got them, forget how you got them. You lucked out, you got them.
And so now the general solution is, y equals c1 times the first one plus c2 times the second one. I'll put an exclamation point here because here we went into the complex realm and managed to find genuine real solutions.
That's why going into the complex realm is always a good thing to do.
Okay, so that's a sidetrack into Euler equations. Any questions about that? Fortunately, our Euler equation is the good one. So back to r squared r double prime plus r prime minus n squared capital R equals zero. I try r of r equals r to a power. And I go through the routine, and my characteristic polynomial is p times p minus 1 plus p minus n squared equals 0. That's the characteristic polynomial. And so I get a p squared minus p plus p. They cancel, and it boils down to be p squared minus n squared equals 0. And so I get two real unequal roots, p equal plus or minus n. And so my general solution is going to be r of r equals c1 r to the n plus c2 r to the minus n.
You found that by using Stein's change of variables in your last homework. So you could deduce this from first principles without having Euler's insight to guess the solution. But we're back in this situation where, this thing has a nasty behavior at the origin. It blows up. And so that would mean that the metal disk is getting hotter than hell. And we don't want, that's not physically meaningful. So once again, we're going to toss this part. C2 must be equal to 0. Otherwise, that thing is going to blow up and get hotter than hell. And so for now, we've got a pretty simple-looking solution. I get my nth function, Rn of R. And now I'll drop my constant, because I could absorb it into my Ans and Bns. So I'll take 1 times R to the n. And now we're almost done. I got a whole bunch of solutions now.
I get u0 r theta is a0, and a un r theta is rn times my theta n, which is an cosine n theta plus bn sine n theta.
And now after Bernoulli's and everybody else was doing this for years, including Fourier and Dirichlet and Poisson, you realize this, my PDE is linear. And the periodic boundary conditions are preserved when you add things together that are periodic. So the brilliant idea was, okay, I've got a bunch of solutions, let's add them all together and see if I can make the last thing hold, which is the boundary conditions.
So let's let my u of r theta be a sum of these things. So it'd be a naught plus the sum as n goes from 1 to infinity of the r to the n's times this. The last thing we need to mess with is the boundary condition. The boundary condition. Which is, let's see, we want on the unit circle, so that's when r is equal to 1. Let's see, that when I stick in r equals 1,
all those r to the n's are just 1 to the n, so
that is just a Fourier series. So it would be a sum as n goes from 1 to infinity, a n cosine n theta plus b n sine n theta. And we want that to be given equal to a given function, an f of theta. And so it's clear that these coefficients have to be the Fourier series for f.
And now we're getting something that feels like a solution. Okay, so that determines the ans and the bns and the a0s. And now what I want to do is show you, like Bernoulli did, I'm going to take his formula and mess around with it and get a much simpler formula. It's going to be fun. Okay, so this is, if I wanted to, I could do Maple now and say, aha, give me an F, I'll calculate these coefficients, I'll stick them in here and have Maple compute this thing and show you that, sure enough, it converges to an actual solution. And it converges rapidly, in fact. The r to the n's make that converge much better than a usual Fourier series. Because they're, you know, if r is less than 1, those are going to 0 fast. So those actually converge nice and fast. And you can actually use these formulas to compute.
It's kind of fun. But I want to mess around with this and get maybe a more famous, useful formula. It's called Poisson formula. And so let's just do it. So I've got my solution now. I want to write these integrals now. It's going to be easier to do this in complex form. So let's write my u of r theta is going to be a sum as n goes from minus infinity to infinity. And let's see, I'll have, instead of the real form of the Fourier series, I'm going to have the complex form. And it's going to look like this. So when the cn's are positive, let's see. When the cn's are positive, it's an r to the n. But when the cn, when the n's are negative, it would be an r to the absolute n. The powers of r are always positive. And here I would get the e to the I n theta, where those coefficients are the Fourier coefficients for the series. So Let me mess around with those. So this is the sum as n goes from minus infinity to plus infinity. And remember, the cn's are 1 over 2 pi, integral from minus pi to pi, f, I need to do a new variable here, let's have it be f of t times e to the minus int dt. That's what the cn's are. And here I would have r to the absolute n times e to the in theta.
And now I'm going to interchange the integral of the sum.
So this is going to be the integral from minus pi to pi, 1 over 2 pi, times the sum as n goes from minus infinity to infinity. Let's see, I'll have an r to the absolute n. I'll have an e.
I'll slide that e to the in theta in there. So I'll have an e to the in theta minus e to the int. And so when I combine those, I'll get in theta minus t.
And let's see, the f of t is in every term, and so I can pull it out. Dt.
And this turns out to be something that's very computable. In fact, this is going to be called the Poisson kernel.
I'm going to call this, let's see, it depends on r, e to the I theta, and e to the I t.
Or if you want, r theta and t. I just kind of like to write it like that, because it's going to turn out to be expressible in terms of those things. And that is called the Poisson kernel.
So if you look in my family tree, there's Jakob Bernoulli, Johann Bernoulli, Euler? Wait a minute, I forget. It's in my office on the wall. But then comes Fourier, and then Dirichlet, and Poisson. And Poisson is the guy who discovered this formula. The Poisson kernel, I'm going to actually add that series up and figure out what it is. It's not as difficult as you might think. So, notice that I've got a theta minus t in that thing. So I'm just going to call it, let's write, I'm just going to call it p of theta for the time being. I'll call it a script p. P of r theta is going to be 1 over 2 pi sum as n goes from minus infinity to plus infinity r to the absolute n e to the I n theta.
So all I did was replace theta minus t with a theta. That looks like a geometric series.
It's kind of two geometric series. So which, let's see, what are they? This is going to be, let's do the positive terms first. 1 over 2 pi, the sum as n goes from 0 to infinity, r to the n, e to the I n theta.
That's the top half, the 0 to infinity half. And now I've got the minus 1 to minus infinity half.
And I'm going to write that like this. Let's see, that would be 1 over 2 pi. The sum, I'm going to go n from 1 to infinity, so it would have to be e to the minus I n theta.
And all the r's would be absolute minus n.
So that would be, if I'm changing my from 1 to infinity, that would be r to the plus n.
And sure enough, these are two geometric series. Remember?
So the aha here is, aha. Remember we had 1 plus z plus z squared plus blah, 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 out to z to the n is equal to 1 minus z to the n plus 1 over 1 minus z.
And if the modulus of z is less than 1, this part tends to 0.
And so what we're going to take here is we're going to take z is r e to the plus or minus I theta.
This would be a sum of r e to the I plus theta to the nth. This one's going to be a sum of r e to the minus I theta to the nth. And both these things have modulus less than 1, and so that means this term is going to go to 0.
And so what we see is that the sum of z to the n, as n goes from 0 to infinity, equals 1 over 1 minus z, if the modulus of z is less than 1.
Because this term goes to 0, and you're left with the famous limit of a geometric series. It works even if z is complex. In fact, even more so.
So, my first piece there, my called it script P of r theta, the first geometric series is going to converge to 1 over 1 minus r e to the I theta. And the second one, well, it doesn't start with 0. That's annoying. And so the next one, I'll pull that out of the sum. I'll have a 1 over 2 pi r e to the minus I theta. And then it starts from 1 if I do that. So that'd be a 1 plus r e to the minus I theta plus blah blah squared, etc.
So I factored out the first term so it would start with 1.
And so now I've got something that's starting to look really clean and nice. I get 1 over 2 pi times 1 over 1 minus r e to the I theta plus r e to the minus I theta over 1 minus r e to the minus I theta.
Starting to look nice. And so now I cross multiply. And what happens? Some good stuff happens.
Let's see, I'd get a 1 minus r e to the minus I theta on the top. On the bottom, I'd get a 1 minus r e to the I theta times 1 minus e to the minus r e to the minus I theta.
That's the conjugate of this thing. And so these two things are conjugates of each other.
So what this really is on the bottom, this is a ZZ, so I'll call this, this is equal to W times W conjugate. This would be the modulus of W squared. So this is the modulus of 1 minus R e to the I theta squared. And let's see, where was I on the top here? Then I've got to multiply, I got to multiply minus r e to the minus I theta times 1. And then I've got a plus r squared e to the I theta times e to the minus I theta.
Those are conjugates of each other, so that has modulus 1, actually.
This is equal to 1.
And notice these two cancel. So, the
what? They're supposed to cancel. 1 minus, oh, it's minus a minus. Yeah, when I do the cross multiplying, it's going to be minus a minus. And this would be a minus a minus a minus. That's minus. Sorry. Yeah, so those cancel on the top. I claim you get something nice. Oh, what, I dropped my 2 pi. It boils down to this. 1 minus r squared on the top, 2 pi on the bottom, and 1 minus r e to the I theta modulus squared.
That is Poisson's kernel. And it's very simple to look at. I just, you know, I summed an infinite series, and whammo, it's this beautiful, simple thing. That's cool.
It solves the Dirichlet problem on the disk. Let's see. Let's think about this for a second. So now my solution to the Dirichlet problem is u of r theta equals, I like to keep my 2 pi with my kernel. Integral from minus pi to pi. One over 2 pi. 1 minus r squared. Oh, I see what's happening. Oh, yeah. I've got to stick in my... f of t. So let's see. I'd have 1 minus r e to the I theta minus t squared f of t dt. That's the Poisson kernel, and it's nice and simple. And so here's the cool thing. Remember we had those three good properties of the Fayer kernel? This kernel has exactly the same three properties. So all it takes to make this thing work is three good properties. So this is the Poisson integral formula.
And now let's see, I could write out that thing in the denominator and realize it's just the law of cosine.
Do I want to do that? I'm getting nervous about the time left. Huh. So you can mess around and calculate that thing. And one nice form of this thing is it's equal to integral from minus pi to pi, 1 over 2 pi, 1 minus r squared, and this turns out to be 1 minus 2r cosine theta minus t plus r squared. That's the law of cosines. So it's a very explicit, real thing.
And that's the Poisson kernel.
And it turns out the Poisson kernel has exactly the same good properties as the Fayer kernel. So here's the good things. It's a good kernel, a very good kernel. So the Poisson kernel, let's call the Poisson kernel P of R e to the I theta e to the I t. So number one, it's positive. P is always, it's actually strictly positive. Never zero. That's a good thing. And it has a big bump. Let's see, if you think about it, where that thing, it has a big bump as r goes to 1. And that's going to make the thing converge to what we want it to converge to. So the integral from minus pi to pi of p of r e to the I theta, e to the I t. If I integrate it, It integrates to 1.
One way to see that is if I solve the problem with temperature 1 on the boundary, the solution is obviously the temperature 1 constant function. And that Poisson kernel spits out that solution. And so the integral is 1. It's easy. Yeah, that's a very easy thing to see without doing any work. So those are the
two good properties. And then that third one is the one that's a little bit harder to express. It goes to 0 outside. So let's see. If I were to graph it, it would look like this. See, I'm going from minus pi to pi. When I put in the theta there, it blows up at theta. And then we're going to go from minus pi to pi. So it's gigantic at theta. But then it goes to 0 really fast. So it's got this great big bump. That doesn't look very good. Yeah, so it's got this great big bump right there. And then it goes to 0 really fast. It's always positive. And so the area under this thing is 1. Just like the Fayer kernel. And it's very concentrated at theta. And if I take a little delta here, let's see if I take a plus delta and a minus delta. And let I delta, so the deal is that P of R e to the I theta I e to the I t goes to 0 uniformly on, I call it I delta, which is minus pi to pi minus the little thing, the little interval about it goes to 0 uniformly on that as R goes to 1.
And that's exactly what makes this thing assume the boundary value is F. It's why Fourier series converge to F. And that's why the solution is going to converge to F on the boundary.
And the last thing that this thing satisfies is that it's harmonic. P of R e to the I theta e to the i t is harmonic in the r and the theta.
So it means, you can take the Laplacian underneath the integral sign without any sweat. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. So you write out that integral formula. You can take the Laplacian under the integral sign, so you get a harmonic function. Then those three properties show that the thing has the right boundary values, and it's continuous up to the boundary. So that's some great math. It's old math, but it's great math. And I'll go through some more careful details of that next time. Did I give everybody's homework up here? Okay, that's enough for today.
Try to do something.
Sometimes it's a little bit of a scary.
You already got yours?
This is legitimate.
I'm like my hair.
I mean, yours is also.